Hello, everyone. This week, we're very happy to welcome Hao Song to give the quantum information seminar, also jointly with the Quantum Matter Group. So Hao's done some very nice work on condensed matter and quantum information, the intersection of those topics. So very excited to hear your talk.
Thank you. Today I will talk about our recent work on optimal threshold for our fractal codes and random spin models with subsystem symmetry. From a condensed matter viewpoint, based on whether there's an energy gap or not, quantum main body states can be divided into gapped and gapless states, like bending insulator and metal. And there's a topological phases like quantum Hall states is a large classes of gapped phases that is exotic and interesting for a long, actually for a long time. People use topological phase to mean interesting gapped phases. However, in the last 10 years, a new family of exotic gapped states has attracted a lot of attention. They are called fractal phases. One crucial difference between conventional topological phases and the fractal phases is fractal phases has sub-extensive ground state degeneracy, but for conventional topological order, it is finite. Okay. To make the story concrete and also for the convenience of our later discussion, let's briefly review what is a fractal by a concrete example called the X cube model. It is an exactly solvable stabilizer model. It is defined on a qubit lattice, and on each edge there's a qubit assigned. And for each cube, there's a stabilizer generator A defined as a product of 12 poly X operators on its edge. And for each vertex, there are three types of B operators. Which are a product of four poly Z operators. Graphically, they look like this. It's easy to see that it is exactly solvable and it is a CSS code. And the ground states is specified by A operator and B operator are all equal one. The ground state degeneracy are three torus of size L times L times L for this model is 2 to the power of 6 L minus 3. So it is kind of sub-extensive in terms of equivalent qubits in the system size. So the ground state degeneracy is sub-extensive. So that means it is a gapped state. In detail, it can be shown that all these ground states are locally indistinguishable. They cannot be distinguished by local operators. So it's very similar to topological order, but not fully topological, because its ground state degeneracy is not topological. It depends on the size of the system. Okay. More importantly, and more interestingly, a more interesting property of this model is excitation. So here, when we apply one poly Z operator, this you will create four excitations of you will flip four A operators, and you can separate the four operators by a membrane operator. So you can get an isolated A excitation by an extensive membrane operator at its corners. This excitation, because it is not created by string operators, it implies it cannot move in the conventional sense. For example, if you have one excitation here, if you try to move it, you will find it has to split into more than one excitation. So that leads to the notion of a fracton. So it is a new emergent quasi-particle which fractalizes into pieces while moving. In short, it is immobile in the conventional sense. Okay. As we just discussed, it's both like and unlike topological order. So it can be viewed as an unconventional topological order. So it is beyond the, for condensed matter series, it's a very interesting new exotic gap to physics because it lies beyond the topological quantum field series. This topic is also very interesting in the quantum computing community. And actually a lot of efforts, a lot of discoveries and and pioneering works comes from quantum computing. Because people are trying to looking for self-error correcting quantum memories in 3D. We know for a conventional topological order, there's always in 3D or 2D, there's always points like excitations that can be that are free to move within the system that will destroy the information when the temperature is not zero. A very important development in this field is in 2011, proposed a new, construct a new kind of fracton model called, nowadays are called type two fracton models. In this model, all the excitations are immobile. Okay. Okay, there are some open, as a very new kind of topological phase that lies beyond all the existing paradigms. There are several crucial open questions in this field. For example, how to properly define such phases in continuum, or in other words, is there a notion of RG fixed point for this kind of phases. Another related question is how to systematically to distinguish or characterize fracton phases. We know in 2D topological phases, most of the information can be described or be characterized by the fusion or braiding information of the anions. So analogously, we wonder whether there's an algebraic theory of fractons. So these two questions are basically for a main motivation to for the studies in the condensed matters community and for the quantum computing community. A crucial question is quantum computation and quantum error correcting properties, whether it may advance some applications in quantum computing. Okay, so as we just briefly mentioned, Fratton code I developed, I invented. One main motivation is to look for self error correction. In this talk, people found it has some benefits for self error correcting, but not yet fully realized of. True self error correction, and in this talk, I will focus on another aspect of error correction, that is active error correction. So, what's the main difference? Self error correction it means the errors can be corrected by just contacting to a thermal bus. So, roughly, so that means the decoder is just the thermal bus, and if it's a self-error correction code, then we can just put it there and cool it down, then we do not need to worry about the error correction anymore. But since we haven't found any true self-error correcting code in 3D or in lower dimensional spaces, so we still need to do some active error correction. And there has been proposed many practical active decoders like RG decoder. There's an interesting question whether fractal order may allow some more efficient decoder than in the conventional top logic order. Design and find practical decoder sometimes may sacrifice some fault tolerance for efficiency, because both fault tolerance and efficiency are important. But today I will focus on fault tolerance only. So I want to study the theoretical limit of fault tolerance of fractal code independent of the choice of decoder. Or in other words, I want to find the optimal decoder in terms of fault tolerance. Okay, so here is the outline of today's talk. So first I will review, because fractal code is has many aspects like the top logic code. So many tools developed in the top logic codes can be generalized and used in the current situation. So I will first review the quantum error correction process in the Turing code. Then I will describe our new result. Okay. I guess everyone is familiar with Turing code. Turing code is can be used as a quantum memory, and it is a CSS code. That means its stabilizers can be divided into two groups. Each group involves only purely poly X operator, purely Z operators. In Turing code, it has the star operator and the placket operator. Both are product of four poly operators. The code space is selected by AB operators equals one. the dimension, when it is defined on a torus, that means with a periodic boundary condition, it's the co-space dimension is 4. So, okay. So equivalently, that's two logic qubits, and the logical C operator and X operator can be easily constructed as shown in the plot. So this is one pair of logical Z and logical X operator, and this is another pair. Okay. You may see that the logical operators has to be extensive, and it is a non-contractible loop around the systems. So its size has to grow with the system size, and it is a non-local object. That implies actually the system, the code space is immune to local errors, but the local errors has to be sparse, or you have only very few local errors. For example, if you have only one local error, that will flip two A operators called A syndrome. And based on the syndrome, you can use any local process to clean the syndrome that will correct the error. However, when the errors are dense, then even the logical operator may appear as an error in this case. So that will lead to some uncorrectable logical errors. So our problem is, suppose that the Z errors or X errors occur at each qubit independently with some probability P. And we want to understand the critical value of P, the code transformed from correctable region to the uncorrectable region. Because the Tori code is a CSS code, it makes the story much simpler. It allows us to treat the Z errors and X errors separately. So in the following discussion, I will focus on Z errors first, and the discussion for X errors is analogous. Okay. Okay, so to get prepared for the discussion, it's convenient to develop a chain complex terminology to describe the CSS code like the Tori code. So we let Q to be the label set of qubits. A to be the label set of the A terms, A stabilizer generators, and B to be the label set of B terms. So Q, for current situation, Q is just the set of edges. A is the set of vertices, and B is a set of plaquettes. To denote any combination of these terms, we write Z2S for any set to denote the set of Z2 valued functions or indicator functions on the set. Then Z2B, Z2Q, Z2A labels the configurations of qubits, A terms and B terms respectively. And the relation between qubits and stabilizers can be expressed in terms of one chain complex. So here the partial B is a linear map that maps a collection of A operator to the Z error configuration generated by them. For example, if it maps this plaquette into its boundary, and it maps two plaquettes as their symmetric, the union of their boundaries. The transpose of the boundary operator maps an X error configuration to the collection of B terms flipped by them. For example, if we the poly now we can represent the poly operator by a dashed link on the dual lattice, then partial B dagger maps is to two plaquettes, it flips. Because all B operators has no A syndromes, and all A operator has no B syndromes. That means the composition of the two maps are zero in both ways. In this terminology, actually the logical operator corresponds to the homology of the chain complex. More concretely, the logical Z operator belongs to the kernel of A operators. It means it has no A syndrome, but it is not generated by B operator. Similarly, the logic X operator has no B syndrome, but it's not generated by A operator. Okay. Now we are prepared to discuss the optimal error correction process to reach the maximal success probability. So first we noticed all the error configurations. Oh, sorry, there's a typo. Acts identically on the code space if and only if there are differences generated by B operators. That means the Z error error configurations can be divided into equivalent classes, and by taking the quotient of the trivial errors generated by B operators. To make the correct, we are making corrections based on the syndrome measurement. So for each possible A syndrome, there are four compatible Z error configuration equivalence classes. We can denote them as eta sigma plus Z1 plus Z2 plus Z1 and plus Z2. Here, Z1 and Z2 are the logical operators and logic Z operators. To reach the maximal success probability, we should choose the eta sigma such that its equivalent class has the largest probability. Then the maximum success, success probability in correcting Z errors is the sum of all the maximum probability of these classes. Then suppose Z error, okay. Then as we just said, suppose the errors happens with probability P independently at each qubit, then by analogy to a statistical models, as we will discuss, we will see that as the system size goes to infinity, below the critical value, the maximum success probability will approach one in the correct tractable region, and the maximum success probability will approach zero in the uncorrectable region. So the problem is to find the critical value. Okay. Because the z error happens at probability p, so the probability for it not happening is 1 minus p. So the probability for a generic z error configuration is given by this. And if we introduce the auxiliary temperature like this, we can actually interpret the probability into some Boltzmann weight. This relation is called the Nishimura line in the PT in the PT plane. After some calculation, we can show that the total probability of a Z error equivalence class is proportional to the partition function of a random icing model at temperature T and with random coupling whose probability is one minus P for ferro case and P for the anti-ferro case. To better understand this correspondence, we can look at the picture. So the probability for a configuration generated by a B operator will correspond to the domain in the icing model. So and here the probability of qubits happening at probability p and is related to the energy related to the two spins assigned to the plaquette. Okay. Here we have developed the error correction process in terms of a chain complex, and actually this formula is general for any CSS code, and we will use it directly afterward. So by this statistical mechanical mapping, well, what information can we get? So the probability to check whether the errors can be predicted, we need to compare the probability for the four classes of Z error configurations, and they are differed by uncontractable domain wall in the random icing model side. So we know in the ordered phase, the domain wall will have an infinite energy because it scales with the system size and it's infinite. So it has a infinite energy because in the ordered phase, that means only one of the four classes dominant. So if we correct with the operator in that class, we can almost sure we can correct the errors. However, if the model is in the disordered phase, then the domain wall the domain wall will be because there are no long range orders, then so the domain wall will be the energy penalty for the domain wall will be zero. So when the system goes to infinity, so all the, then that means the four classes of errors are has a comparable probabilities. That means based on the syndrome, we cannot tell what really happens. There's always some logical errors uncorrectable. So by this statistical mapping, we are we change the we map the threshold problem into a condensed matter problem of defining deciding the phase diagram of a random Ising model. And and it is has been studied for a long time in the spin glass community, and a typical picture for this model is looks like this. And we need to notice that because our probability our error probability is related to temperature, so for error correction, what really matters is along the Nishimori line. After we got the phase diagram, and we got the disordered phase and disordered phase, and we draw the Nishimori line, the intersection between the phase boundary and the Nishimori line will tell will give us the optimal threshold. Okay, now. After review this, after this, the short review of the target code error correction, we can, and we have developed in terms of the chain complex, which is general enough for any CSS code. Now we can study the X cube code now. Okay. It's like target code is also a CSS code, which allows us to treat Z and X error separately. And now the A operator is a product of 12 X operator and B is a product of 4 Z operators. And as we just mentioned before, the code space selected by AB equals 1 has a dimension 2 to the power 6 L minus 3. So there are 6 L minus 3 logic qubits. And the logical operator is drawn here. The logic Z, the poly Z operator can be drawn as a red link on the direct lattice, or can be drawn as a gray plaquette on the dual lattice. And the poly X operator is drawn as a sign link on the direct lattice. So the logic is Z operator is a membrane operator extended along one direction, and this, the corresponding Z logic X operator is a string operator perpendicular to the membrane operator. Okay. Now we can use our developed formula we just mentioned before to map the error correction process to into statistical mechanical models. As before, we assume that the errors occurs at the probability P, and is for each configuration, its probability is given by the same formula. By this formula, using the mapping, we can get the probability for the x error equivalence class can be expressed in terms of a random Plaketta IC model. And here each spin is assigned to the cube of the direct lattice or on the vertex of the dual lattice. It's a Plaketta model, so it has a four-body interaction, and it's a random model. Its coupling is plus one or minus one with probability one minus p and p. For the z error, the story is completely parallel, and the resulting model is called what we call a random and isotropically coupled Ashkin-Taylor model. It has two Eysenck spins at each vertex, and it has a two-body coupling in the x and y on the x and y bonds, but has a four-body coupling along the z bond. Okay, both models has a planar subsystem symmetry. For the Plaketta, for the random Plaketta Eysenck model, the Hamiltonian is invariant. If you flip, you can flip any spins within a XY plane, YZ plane, or ZX plane. The Hamiltonian is invariant under such operations. To describe the phase transition and the symmetry breaking phases for such models, we need to construct a correlation function that is invariant under the symmetry. So the simplest possibility is a product of four spins. So it's a four-point correlation function. And the correlation function can, the correlator can be, the four spins can be divided into two groups, and we are separated from each other. In the ordered phase, it has a long range order. Then as r goes to infinity, the correlation function will be non-zero. But in the disordered phase, there's no long range order. When r goes to infinity, the correlation function will go to zero. Accordingly, we can construct the in terms of order parameters. This order parameter can be viewed as a plane-wise dipole moment. Because each plane, the dipole moment can point in opposite directions. To avoid the trivial cancellations, we have to add an absolute value between planes. That's crucial for the numerics. For the random and isotropically coupled Ashkin-Taylor model, the planar symmetry flips sigma x flips the two spins with, for example, it will flip the SX to S minus SX, and it will also flip SY within each XY plane. You may be a little, you may not look at this carefully. So sigma z is just a combination of sigma x and y. And on each vertex, there's only two spins there. So yeah, the symmetry looks a little complicated, but it turns out the correlation the symmetry allowed the correlation function takes a simpler form. It's just a two point correlation along a line, and accordingly there's the other parameter is line wise magnetization. Okay. Using the other parameter and based on the Merriman, using Monte Carlo simulation, measuring the other parameter, the heat capacity, and the energy of the system, we can determine the phase diagram of the two models. The basic feature of the phase diagram is as follows. First, when the error rate or the randomness is more, the phase transition is first order. It can be revealed by the energy histogram. For both models, there are first order transitions at a low randomness. As the randomness gets stronger and stronger, close to the critical value, the phase transition are softened into a continuous phase transitions. So to precise determine the and you can see it will become harder to determine the location of the transition when the disorder is strong. So we use the standard technique in spin glass community to determine the location of the phase transition. The technique is to measure the so-called second momentum correlation length. So it basically is the Fourier transform of the correlation function, the ratio of the Fourier transform of the correlation function, and it is defined by the Fourier transform of the correlation function, and the key minimum depends on the is the smallest non-zero k vector compatible with the system size. There's a scaling rule for the normalized correlation length that goes like this. The scaling function means the normalized correlation length will cross at TC and T0 at this point. So if there's a continuous phase transition, based on this phenomenon, we can detect the location of the phase transition. For example, for a Plaquette-Easing model, we can see there's a clear crossing when P is smaller than 0.1152. So that's what's the result we get here. After that, the cross will be unclear. And when it goes even bigger, then there's no crossing behavior anymore. For the Ashkin-Tella model, the story is similar. And we got the phase transition we get the phase transition at t equals 0.075. Yeah, and after going across the Nishimura line, the detection of the phase transition will be much harder. So we didn't make a detailed study for the follower region. But it's already enough for our purpose from these two values. We just got to the optimal threshold for the CSS, for the S-cube model. Yeah, it's like this. We can compare it with other models like 2D target code and color code. Both of them are about 11% for in 2D. We found the fractal code has a advantage compared to 3D topological codes because it's a minimal threshold, because X and Z errors, the minimal one is bigger than the topological codes. A possible reason for this is may due to approximate duality found in a lot of models. So in all these models, in all the topological models, it is actually pointed out by Nishimura in 2007. Actually, the X error and Z error threshold are related by this equation, and H is the Shannon entropy. So there's no rigorous proof of this duality, and actually nowadays people believe it's only approximation, but and the relation holds very well for all for other models started before. For example, the target code and the color code, although they look very different, and because the X error and the Z error are symmetric, so the corresponding statistics model are self-dual, and this relation just solve this equation just to give 11%. So although the models are different, they have the same threshold. For topological code in 3D, to explain why they have a very small threshold for one error, that's because in 3D, the two errors behave very different. One error will create loop excitations of the system. One error will create only point-like excitations. And the corresponding statistical models are either easy model or a 3D easy model or 3D gauge models. So their properties are quite different. That leads to a big difference into the two threshold. For fractal codes, however, actually the two errors are not so different from each other, but both of them can create are creating point-like excitations. That's probably the reason why the two errors is comparable and it has a better minimum error threshold. Another comment I want to give about the error correction is we can generalize the argument of Nishimura and prove that Actually, along the Nishimori line, there should be no glass face. This can be proved rigorously. Because we want the model to be in the ordered phase for the code to be correctable. If there are glass phase, that means you will take space of the phase diagram, maybe make the error threshold smaller. Fortunately, this will never happen, and it also makes the simulation simpler. A little more details about glass order is what do we mean by glass order? So, in the earlier discussion, we have defined the correlation function for the order. And for the normal order parameter. And correspondingly, there's also a glass order version for the correlation function. The crucial thing is there's a square before the disorder average. And the glass order, the notion of glass order we are using here is it has a vanishing order parameter, but a non-vanishing glass order parameter. We found the Nishimori's argument for the random IC model can be generalized to general spin models with random spin models with a subsystem symmetry. And in general, along the Nishimori line, we always have the glass order parameter equals the order parameter. So along the Nishimori line, we can only have ordered phase and disordered phase. There will be no glass phase. Okay, here is a short summary of our work. So we make a first study of the optimal threshold of fractal code by the basic example of S cube. And for this S cube code, we find its error threshold by Monte Carlo situation, and it has a higher a minimum error threshold than 3D topological codes. And the statistical mapping gives a random spin model with subsystem symmetry, which is a topic that is not well studied in the statistical mechanical community. But now we give a motivation for further study. And we also analytically show that there's no glass order along the Nishimori line. Numerically, our numerical result below the Nishimori line suggests there's no glass order as well. We feel maybe it's because the symmetry is planar, so it's more or less like a 2D system than 3D system. And it's well known that a 2D random IC model has no glass phase, but a 3D can have a glass phase. Okay. Finally, we also point out the approximate duality also looks hold for a fractal code. And there's also some outer look, and we are going to do and for the we will generalize our study to Haskell and checkable model. Both of the models, in both models, the X error and the Z error are equivalent, so their threshold are equal. So if the approximate duality holds for these models, does that mean we can just get the threshold to 11%? But there's no rigorous argument for this. we still numerical simulation to further confirm this conjecture. Another possible direction is the measurement errors. In the earlier discussion, we assume all the syndrome measurements are perfect. However, it don't have to be so. So for a general discussion, we need to include measurement errors. And by including for Turing code in 2D, including the effects of including measurement error will lead to some statistic model of 3D, which is gauge models. And for fragment code, it should lead us to some non-conventional gauge theories in 4D, and those models are also not well studied before, and probably because there's no good motivations for them. But now we have some motivation, and we can motivate further studies about those models. Another possible thing to think about fractal order and quantum computing is whether the entanglement states in the fractal order it will be helpful to realize universal quantum computing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Finally, I like to thank the collaborators in this work. The first three collaborators are the numerical group in Munich and these two collaborators we collaborate on the analytic parts of the work. Okay, that's basically about our work. Thank you for your attention. Any questions?
Great, let's all thank Paul for a really interesting talk. And yeah, if you have a question, please just unmute yourself.
Hey, thanks for the talk.
Okay, all right.
So I have a question about these thresholds. So you presented some intuition that the approximate duality might give this higher minimum threshold. But is there any relation to the mobility of the particles, or is it just not related to the threshold value?
I don't think it's related to the mobility of the threshold. We know that the 4D Turing code with loop excitation only, they are self-error correcting code.
Mm-hmm.
But their optimal threshold is still 11%, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I see. And for the Ha code, what is the classical model look like in 4D? Like what? A little bit hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's a tetrahedron model. It has two tetrahedron terms.
Mm-hmm.
It basically has two tetrahedron terms. Yes. I think in VG Ha and Fu's paper about S cube model.
Mm-hmm.
They're making a gauging process to get some class model into a quantum model. Actually, our mapping is roughly the inverse process. So for those self-tuned models like Haskell and the checkbox model, the statistics model is, I think it is exactly what they start from.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But for actual model, I think we get two models here. And I think We get two models here. I think in their paper, they are gauging this model to get this model. I think, but I didn't check, but I believe that if you gauge this model, you will also get an X cube model.
Mm-hmm.
Without disorder, but here, yeah.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
I have a question. Very nice talk.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So my question is about this. See, you are talking about effective models when you try to do error correction.
Uh-huh.
So you talked about Bond random model in three dimension. There is a very old interesting controversy whether three dimensional Bond random model exhibits ultrametricity symmetry breaking.
Uh-huh.
Because normally in the Sherrington Kirkpatrick model, ultrametric symmetry breaking comes in a very natural way, Parisi solution.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in the short range 3D icing model with Bond randomness, there are numerical indications that ultrametricity symmetry is broken. So it should have interesting implications for your error analysis, because suppose you are pushed into the glassy region.
Uh-huh.
And if there is ultrametric structure,
you mean this region?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We checked. at the first, we thought we have some glass phase, like this parameter is non-zero, but this is zero in large distance. But after check the correlation length, it doesn't look like there's this two glass face there. But the simulation in this region is very hard because you can see it's a 3D. We with our technique, we can only go to L equals 12. And if you measure like a heat capacity or other parameters, the finite size effects is so I was only
trying to find out if there will be some qualitative consequences if there is some ultrametric structure, what it will mean in terms of your toric code analysis and so on. Suppose one finds a glass ultrametric structure in one of the models,
uh-huh.
It may have some qualitative consequences. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. My conjecture is the dimension of the subsystem symmetry is more important than the actual dimension of the system.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you.
I also have a question. Is there any hope of generalizing this approach to kind of LDPC codes that are not topological codes, maybe some of these constant rate quantum codes that have been recently proposed?
Non-topological codes?
Mm-hmm.
I have thought about this question, but I haven't make an effort to thinking about it at the moment.
Yeah, so this may be a related question. So you have this like sub-extensive ground state degeneracy here, but that's not, is that causing you, I mean, so if I was thinking of doing like a tensor network decoding or something of these kind of codes, then I would need to like compute the coset probabilities for all of the different possible cosets. And that's going to like have a bigger overhead compared with the toric code, where I only have to compute the probability for a constant number. Is that also a problem you face here, or does the mapping kind of to the StatMech model get? I mean, you don't have to worry about this as much.
So maybe
ask again. If I wanted to let's say in an extreme case, I had a code with a linear number of logical qubits. So then if I want to compute all the different coset probabilities, there's like many of them, and it's going to slow down everything.
You want to maybe compute the ratio between all the classes?
Yeah, but if there are loads and loads of classes, because the number of logical qubits is extensive, this is causing you a problem as well.
I think a lot about this question, but actually, I try to prove the original. I think if we make an assumption that the ratio is some exponential form, and this will not cause a problem, but a rigorous proof. I don't have a rigorous proof, but after conjecture that the ratio has some exponential form, like e to some coefficients to the power of free energy difference, you can show that the infinite ground state geometry or infinite logical operator will not be big enough to cancel that energy difference effects. So it's okay.
Thanks, very interesting.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
So in the first diagram you present, you mentioned that for the small disorder in the large temperature regime, you get the first order transition, right? And when you increase the quench disorder,
yes,
have a continuous transition.
Yes. So
how to understand it? I mean, like, is there any intuition about this?
Okay. For the first order transition, I think a lot of work studies without disorder case mentioned it's first order. And with
I remember the increasing quench disorder can soften the first order transition, but I forget how to, like, is there any, I forget how to understand this in an intuitive way. But I remember it's a pretty general result.
Oh, okay. I think, let me see whether. I think in our paper, we have a reference for this phenomenon, it's a numerical group. They add this reference and they start harder on this problem than me. So right now I don't have a quick answer to this question, but you can look at the reference in our paper. So there's one reference there about this phenomenon.
Sounds good. Yeah, thank you for a nice talk.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank Hal once more for a great talk.